Good evening, folks, and welcome back on this Saturday, the 10th day of October 2020. I'm your host, Mark Hall. And somehow, when it comes to trying to wrap up another week like this one, where we draw ever closer to that date certain when it looks like the plan is to, one way or another, get that second American Civil War kicked off good and hard, and furthermore, obfuscate the election to the point that most Americans simply won't know what happened when the rest of the revolution takes place on schedule in early January. But somehow or other, given everything that's going on, this story struck me as a really interesting way to begin that wrap-up. It comes via the Silver Doctors and the United States Mint, which tells us that they intend to hike the prices for American Eagle silver coins, among other things, pretty dramatically. Effective October the 13th, next week, they say it's to cover rising costs. And what they don't seem to emphasize, anyway, is that those rising costs certainly include real things, like the precious metals, especially silver. But anyway, resetting silver prices, as they put it, is necessary. And they're doing so, and doing it good and hard, downright dramatically. Uncirculated silver eagles next week will go for $67 a piece. That's up 25% in one fell swoop, and some of us can pretty much remember when you could get a tube of them for that. Or more recently, even at least a handful. The big question is, suggests the Silver Doctors, just how many hours before the U.S. Mint sells out of everything, or before their website crashes. I have to add this, folks. If I was the Mint, I wouldn't want to be selling silver coins at fixed prices, knowing full well that it probably won't be too long before you won't be able to get any more of it. Oh, and knowing that at least part of the goal here is to delay that day and make sure that as many people as possible are blindsided by it when it happens. Let's call this a related story, shall we? Gold soars above $1,900 as U.S. dollar plunges. After spiking on Tuesday, it begins. After Trump's no-deal tweet, the U.S. dollar has been in free fall, tumbling to three-week lows as of Friday morning, which has sparked a bid under recently pummeled precious metals, or at least the paper versions thereof, pushing gold futures back above $1,900 to a fiat ounce, while silver futures, too, are breaking out. And they quote Peter Schiff here, who recently noted, "The problem is, once you accept the false premise that government stimulus actually helps the economy, that it really is a stimulus, well, then you've kind of lost the argument. Because if borrowing and printing $1.6 trillion, hey, just add some zeros. Anyway, if that's a good thing, he says, why isn't borrowing and printing $2.4 trillion a better thing? Because you put Republicans in the position of arguing that $2.4 trillion is just too much of a good thing. Somehow we can create $1.6 trillion out of thin air and spend that. It's really going to help. But $2.4, ooh, that might be too much. Might hurt. I mean, when does something good, asked Schiff, suddenly become something bad? Or just maybe, folks, has it been something bad for a long, long time now? And eventually, even some leftists may wake up and realize it. And that day is the thing that really will separate the wheat from the chaff. Says Zero Hedge, is this the start of a herd panic at the prospect of some $7 trillion in a Harris-Biden-AOC stimulus based on MMT real soon now? Well, one way or the other, folks, the die is cast, the bubble is poked, and as the biggest fiat debt bubble in human history collapses, we're probably going to get to see again, if you've ever read history, that is, what it all looks like. Even in the crooked casinos, though, gold was up almost 2% during the day, well above $1,925 to a fiat ounce, while silver again poked its head above $25, almost a 5% move. Premiums for the real stuff, like junk silver, over the so-called spot price, are again heading back up as well. As for the rest of the news, and maybe we'll go in reverse chronological order this time, I think a couple of sign of the time stories are a good way to kick that off. And not only that, but harbingers of bigger things to come. In the People's Republic of California, so-called officials have toppled a giant Trump sign overlooking the 405 freeway, even though it happens to be on private property. Oh, wait a minute. No, come on, folks. This is the People's Republic of California. We all know there's no such thing as private property anymore. Here's how Zero Hedge's summary via Monetary Metals blog puts it. Party officials in California were so triggered when someone erected a giant Trump sign on a hillside overlooking the Los Angeles freeway, they promptly removed it, and private property didn't even slow them down, within 2 hours after it was reported by one of their many communist Karens. The sign, visible on the hills near the Sepulveda Pass as drivers began their Tuesday commute, was first reported just after 7 a.m., whereupon California Highway Patrol called the sign a traffic hazard because some drivers began to decelerate to take photos of it. Hey, folks, I'm betting they knew they'd better hurry. By 9 a.m., though, the police state had done their job, and the sign was taken down by Caltrans, the California Department of Octung Transportation. And if you've seen the L.A. freeways, you know what a great job they do, which entered private property and, quote, laid it down so it wasn't a visual distraction. It's unknown whether the owners, sick, of the property were actually notified before the sign was toppled, or whether they gave permission or were coerced into it, or however it was done. The point, of course, is, folks, this is no longer even the People's Republic of California that's doing the dirty work here. It's the CCCP, the California Communist Chinese Party, and they don't even try to hide it anymore. And I have to make one more observation before we move on to the other sign of the times today. What do you bet that if the sign had said Biden, it'd not only still be up, but Caltrans would have probably lowered the speed limit on the highway outside there to make sure people had to slow down and look at it for a bit longer. How to spin it? Easy. They just call it art instead of a traffic hazard. And remember, art is in the eye of the beholder, or at least those that are allowed to behold anything. Next, from the other left coast and Ministry of Truth, all the news is fit for you to be allowed to read, the New York Times. And you could actually call this more proof that the conspiracy theorists have been right all along, again, since they've been claiming literally for decades that there is an international global communist plan to take over the entire United States, along with the rest of the world, and finish replacing what's left of the Constitution with a UN-type socialist global government. And no, they're not trying to hide this anymore either. From Peter Beinart at the New York Times, contributing opinion writer, America, he says, may need international intervention. And yeah, he admits even Democrats might find it hard to imagine, but they're working on it. The leaders of the free world would in fact benefit from United Nations oversight. And he begins by telling us about the rightful president of Belarus, and who better to decide than them, Svetlana Tikhanovskaya, appeared on video last month before the United Nations Human Rights Council, declaring that her country's August election, kind of like what the New York Times intends to help push over the next few months, had been stolen. And despite objections from a representative of the Belarusian government, who she said had no right to address that august body anyway, wait a minute, just who does she think she is? To Facebook or Twitter? She implored the United Nations to act, saying standing up for democratic principles and human rights is not interfering in internal affairs. It's a universal question of human dignity. You know, the kind of thing that the New York Times espouses every day. Bill of Rights be damned. Well, there's the setup and the spin. Here comes the pitch. No one knows, says Beinart, how Donald Trump's COVID-19 booga 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 diagnosis will affect his presidential campaign. Now, we know how we intend to spin it, obviously. But before falling ill, he repeatedly suggested that he wouldn't accept the results of the election should he lose. Well, that's not true, but that doesn't slow him down. I could at least as honestly say, if they openly rig it, don't even try to hide what they're doing, and then steal it, driving it into the House of Representatives, where they intend to do what, increasingly obviously, they intend to do. In that case, he says, Joe Biden should follow Ms. Tikhanovskaya's example and appeal to the world for help. Yeah, for many Americans, raised to see the United States as the natural leader of the once free world, I put that extra word in there, you can guess, it may be hard to imagine, says the leftist here, requesting foreign intervention against tyranny, sick, in our own land. But as historians, like a couple of infamous leftists that they keep pushing, have detailed, there's a long history of black Americans doing exactly that. Let's skip the propaganda and cut to the chase. No, he says, admittedly, Joe Biden is not W.E.B. Du Bois, let alone Malcolm X. Why, he's not even Che Guevara or Fidel Castro. And he didn't say it, but you can guess, I knew Fidel. Fidel was a friend of mine. You're no Fidel Castro. Anyway, but the party now faces chronic racist disenfranchisement. You know, why, these bigots won't let people vote just because they're not legal or even just because they're dead. And the more the Democratic Party becomes a vehicle for black political empowerment, the less its votes count. So Democrats must now win the popular vote, he contends, by 3, 4, even 5 percentage points to be assured of winning the Electoral College. No, folks, there is no correlation there. No surprise that the anti-constitutionalists at the New York Times are ignorant of the Constitution and the purpose of the Electoral College to begin with, not to mention the history. The point of the Electoral College is to make sure that large states and socialist states don't disenfranchise the rest of the country. It was that brilliant compromise that enabled the Constitution to be ratified in the first place. Among other things, it gave us the House and the Senate as separate legislative bodies, and it's the reason they hate it so much. But even if they overcome all of these obstacles, says the socialist rag here, Mr. Trump may still not concede. But we have a plan. So he goes on to say that us Bolsheviks, although he doesn't come right out and use that term, should spend the coming weeks working to ensure that this year's OSCE observer mission. What does that really stand for? Organization for the Socialist and Communist Experiment in Europe? Anyway, something like that, despite being banned from many states, especially in the Deep South, can do its revolutionary thing. Then if Mr. Trump and his allies halt the counting of ballots, before, I guess, they finish manufacturing enough to do whatever it takes, or, how dare they, disregard them altogether, Democrats can use the OSCE's report as evidence in order to appeal to the same body that is so important in accomplishing what we have had in mind for years, the United Nations Human Rights Council, where, you know, the likes of Saudi Arabia and China can represent the interests of the people, well, the people who count anyway. All right, well, enough of that. But hopefully you get the point. The kinds of things that conspiracy theorists have been saying are in plan for a long time and happening behind the scenes are still in plan. They're just now right out in the open. Nope, we no longer need the little dog Toto to pull back the curtain. And this wizard is a lot closer to the wicked witch than the benevolent old good guy. I guess the only similarity that remains is the white hair. Because this time, we're looking at somebody who's old, evil, not to mention crooked, creepy, and senile. Which brings us to the debate, and the one who's intended actually to take the oath in lieu of that guy who even most of them wouldn't want to have his finger on the nuclear button. After all, he might just get the shakes. And last night, of course, Vice President Mike Pence debated Kamala Harris, the woman who is intended to be the real presidential candidate, even if one thing you can count on for sure won't come up in any of the questions. Not yet, not in the future, and certainly not last night. Matter of fact, I checked the transcripts. The word senile in any form, Alzheimer's, dementia, mental incapacity, or the like, never ever appeared in there. No surprise. Come on, at least Ronald Reagan was asked whether age would be a factor. And his answer was one for the ages. And not only was it one of the best one-liners in presidential debate history, in hindsight, it also reveals just how far we've come from a time when at least there was an attempt at integrity in the process. Listen to this.
Mr. Truitt, your question to President Reagan.
Mr. President, I want to raise an issue that I think has been lurking out there for 2 or 3 weeks and cast it specifically in national security terms. You already are the oldest president in history, and some of your staff say you were tired after your most recent encounter with Mr. Mondale. I recall yet that President Kennedy had to go for days on end with very little sleep during the Cuba Missile Crisis. Is there any doubt in your mind that you would be able to function in such circumstances?
Not at all, Mr. Truitt, and I want you to know that also I will not make age an issue of this campaign. I am not going to exploit for political purposes my opponent's youth and inexperience. I still have time. I might add, Mr. Truitt, I might add that it was Seneca or it was Cicero, I don't know which, that said, if it was not for the elders correcting the mistakes of the young, there would be no state.
Mr. President, I'd like to head for the fence and try to catch that one before it goes over, but I'll go on to another.
In the video, you'll note even Mondale, his opponent, as well as the moderator and an entire set of questioners, there were several, were laughing their heads off and had to admit that, yeah, the President of the United States took the tough question that had to be asked. He took the tough question that wouldn't even be allowed to be asked today and nailed it. Nothing like that even remotely this time around. When it comes to tough questions, there was one you just plain knew wouldn't be asked. Let's try this on for size. Senator Harris, I want to raise an issue that's been lurking out there for 2 or 3 months and cast it explicitly in national security terms. Senator Harris, what do you say to those who suggest you will be the de facto president, if not the real president, since Senator Joe Biden is obviously too senile to faithfully execute the office of President of the United States, much less preserve, protect, and defend its Constitution? I read through any number of debate postmortems, including a whole lot from the far left this morning, and the fact that not one of them even mentions that glaringly obvious omission is about as telling as anything could possibly be. No shortage, though, of who won. What's interesting, folks, is that it was the left that thought they could put President Reagan down by capitalizing on the age issue and suggesting that he, too, maybe wasn't quite at the top of his game going into that election against Mondale. And as we now know in hindsight, later, he did suffer from dementia. But he wasn't as far along as the current guy already is. Obviously, he was sharp enough to put the issue to bed. Draw your own conclusions. So first, let's go right to the leftist lion's den and see how the New York Times is spinning it. Best and worst moments of the Kamala Harris-Mike Pence debate, they say. Most bizarre moment was the fly. Yeah, the big deal, or so they thought, was the fly that landed on the vice president's hair. They give each of their predominantly leftist bunch a chance to comment on it, and it was surprising for that reason. For example, Jamel Bowie, number one in their list, says it was a tie. I don't think there was a clear winner. Elizabeth Bruning, oh, Kamala Harris. Pence may be evangelical, but he's not charismatic. Christopher Buskirk said Pence won this debate. He was calm, professional, competent, and focused. He was, in some sense, the answer to every criticism leveled at Trump after the last debate. A lot of the MAGA base is lukewarm toward Pence, but here and there respect. More importantly, he looks purpose-built to reassure wavering Trump supporters and undecided voters in battleground states. Linda Chavez, oh yeah, Harris was the clear winner. And the leftist moderator, even she admits, struggled. Allowing Pence to run, she said. Even some of the left had to admit that, as Ronald Douthat put it, Mike Pence won, you have to take into account, he said, the degree of difficulty here, because Pence's task was to normalize the presidency of Donald Trump after his most insane week yet, and he gave a truly remarkable, and yes, often truly brazen, performance of normalcy, from which Harris's prosecutorial style was unable to shake him, and so on. There was no shortage of the typical sycophant like Melania Price, who said, for the most part, Kamala Harris owned this debate because, unlike Biden, quote, she was able to make her opponent stop talking and interrupting her. And listen to this typical tripe from Will Wilkinson, quote, running against the Trump-Pence record is like riding a levitating bike downhill with the wind at your back, especially when you're ahead double digits in the polls. Oh, yeah. And if you believe that, folks, I've got some crappy papers to sell you. Because so was Hitler, remember? All Kamala Harris needed, he said, to do was look credibly presidential, which she pulled off with poise, blah-de-blah-de-blah. And the underhanded compliments like Charlie Wardell, Pence is no more principled than Trump, just more disciplined. Even a bit of honesty occasionally came through. Daniel McCarthy wrote, Mike Pence won the debate by default at the start when Harris failed to give a concrete answer to how a Biden administration would respond differently to COVID-19. The Biden-Harris campaign, he said, is a complaint, not an answer. But my personal favorite, when it comes to far-left Kool-Aid, was Mike LaBosh, who wrote, Mike Pence won. Full disclosure, I wanted to loathe Pence, because I so often do, on automaton grounds. The plexiglass erected around him served as a rebuke of the administration's non-response to the pandemic. The glass was just as stiff as Pence, but more transparent, har-har, making me feel as though I was visiting a Golden Corral sneeze-guarded salad bar. But where was this ferocious prosecutor, Kamala Harris, that we were warned of? She was smiley and warm. I'd like her if she were hosting a Lifetime talk show, but she failed to cut off the ring, to bite down hard, to bludgeon Pence with facts, when so many of the facts were on her side. Pence, he said, edged out Harris simply by having command of his facts and appearing to be quasi-human. Good grief, folks. This is what now passes for all the news that's fit to print. There was, however, at least one honest comment, easily confirmed by second sources, too, and Christopher Buskirk, whom you may recall said Pence won the debate, also wrote this. Pence asked Harris whether she and Joe Biden would pack the Supreme Court if they won the election, and Amy Coney Barrett were confirmed before Inauguration Day. Last week, Biden flatly refused to answer the question. Harris bobbed and weaved and put the worst possible look on avoiding a perfectly reasonable direct question about a hugely consequential matter. Her evasion, he said, is significant and only serves to reinforce the impression of a ruling class that mouths pieties about the American people and our democracy, sick, but refuses to play it straight when it matters, unquote. Zero Hedge's summary of the event from multiple sources included a recap of each of the 9 discussion topics, starting with the COVID response, which they claimed Pence won. A body blow slamming Kamala on vaccines included stop playing politics with people's lives. They called the health of the candidates discussion a tie. When it came to the economy, Pence won, they said, because the vice president crushed Harris on Biden's taxes, briefly silencing her over the Trump tax cut repeal. When it came to climate change, sick, they said Pence won, perhaps surprisingly, but Harris was unable to recover from being cornered on her sponsorship of the openly socialist Green New Deal. China, Pence won, because Harris and her facts were all over the place, and Pence closed with Biden's cheerleading for China. Foreign relations, they called a tie. The Supreme Court, they gave to Pence because of Harris's flat refusal to answer the question about packing the court. While Pence was frank about being pro-life, on racial justice, they said Pence won, perhaps rather stunningly. He crushed her on misleading quotes and sound bites. And finally, when it came to the transfer of power, they said again Pence won, because while Harris went, vote now, vote early, she didn't say it, but everybody knew she was thinking it, and vote often, Pence reminded the audience that Harris spent the last 4 years trying to overturn the previous election. And my favorite of their comments had to do with the way that the so-called moderator, Susan Page, led off, reminding the audience that the attendees were all wearing masks. Now, that's not the way I'd put it. The attendees were all muzzled, and that therefore she hoped for a better behaved debate. Zero Hedge did suggest that it was perhaps President Trump who summed up the first half of the debate best. Quote, Mike Pence is doing great. She is the gaffe machine. Given all the PC crapola, folks, from climate change and the failure to call that out for what it is, while climate change is real and has far, far more to do with things like volcanism and the sun than your carbon footprint, the man-made part that they don't talk about is a scientific fraud, and of course the godlike vaccine panacea, where it seems like the only real difference is which of the two big government teams is going to force you to take their big pharma donor poke. Oh yeah, and who can short-circuit the testing better? Hint. The word long-term doesn't show up in the debate transcripts either. Well, anyway, given all that, I didn't find too many quotes worthy of actually repeating here, with the possible exception of this one, where he basically admits that the Big Brother response of the Trump administration to the COVID-1984 pandemic is a whole lot like what a totalitarian Harris-Biden administration is promising to do, only maybe not quite as draconian.
And our nation has gone through a very challenging time this year. But I want the American people to know that from the very first day, President Donald Trump has put the health of America first. Before there were more than 5 cases in the United States, all people who had returned from China, President Donald Trump did what no other American president had ever done. And that was he suspended all travel from China, the second largest economy in the world. Now, Senator Joe Biden opposed that decision. He said it was xenophobic and hysterical. But I can tell you, having led the White House Coronavirus Task Force, that that decision alone by President Trump bought us invaluable time to stand up the greatest national mobilization since World War II.
He went on to say how he believed the early action by the administration saved lots of lives and bought the United States time to do further preparation, among other things. We did, of course, hear about the vaccine panacea, but where I thought it got interesting was the following.
The reality is, when you look at the Biden plan, it reads an awful lot like what President Trump and I and our task force have been doing every step of the way.
Now, I found it telling, but kind of disgusting as well, that he'd even admit that.
And quite frankly, when I look at their plan that talks about...
Yeah, lots of good tyrannical stuff.
It looks a little bit like plagiarism. which is something Joe Biden knows a little bit about.
All right, clever, still disgusting, and certainly revealing. And we'll be right back.
Did you write the book of love, and do you have faith in God above? If the Bible tells you so, how do you believe in rock and roll? Can you ain't seen nothing yet.
Welcome back now to the second segment for this evening. This is your host, Mark Hall. And I guess we can't complete a wrap-up of the week gone by without at least noting all of the panic over the weekend about the president and the booga 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 flu, miracle drug treatments, and all kinds of conspiracy theories, especially this time from the far left. Although the more than fortuitous timing of the event, that is if you're the deep state, and the fact that it seemed to strike only a cluster of Republicans at the Judge Amy Coney Barrett announcement, no doubt raised more than a few eyebrows, and rightfully so. So let's kick this segment off by hearkening back to Tuesday. President Donald Trump did leave Walter Reed Hospital on Monday after fighting the coronavirus, or that's the story anyway, throughout the weekend and returned to the White House. Press cameras filmed the president as he exited the doorway, pumping his fist before descending the stairs and only lightly touching the handrail. And here, folks, is where the plot thickens. One reporter shouted a question at the president, an event which this week with ABC summarized thusly, quote, the president did not answer a shouted question about others in his orbit who have tested positive. What he was actually asked, folks, was a pretty blankety-blanket rude question about whether or not he was a super spreader of the coronavirus. I bet you're wondering if it was Chris Wallace's question. Suffice it to say it was some idiot masquerading as a journalist whose name was actually Hunter. The president, still wearing a mask, did not respond, but actually said thank you to the press and then flashed a thumbs-up sign. In other words, he was more polite than they deserved. But wait, there is more to the story, and for that, let's turn to a better summary, courtesy of Zero Hedge, in this case via Bullion Star, which begins by noting, as is often the case with anything and everything involving President Trump, his return to the residence of the White House last night was either a stirring show of strength or a reckless example of the hated president's callous disregard for the safety of others. It all seems to depend on where one gets their news, or what passes for it nowadays. You see why I started off the way I did, folks? Reuters reported, yeah, not one of those A-list sources, the Trumps heavily coordinated their terminology, spectacle, where he then encouraged Americans to get out there, but be careful, elicited a backlash mostly because of Trump's shocking decision to remove his mask while standing, very much alone and very much separated from anybody else, I note, in front of the South Portico, prompting the so-called Newswire service to find a couple of partisan doctors to opine on the record that they were horrified, shocked, I tell you, by Trump's behavior and words. And here I have to quote this BS, folks. Trump has repeatedly flouted socialist distancing guidelines, they failed to spell it properly, meant to curb the virus's spread. No, that's not the point of the socialist distancing guidelines. It's meant to curb the spread of individuality and the concept of freedom and liberty. The only thing masks curb is your oxygen intake and the ability to think. Anyway, back to the propaganda. Meant to curb the virus's spread and ignored his own, yeah, far left Obama holdover, I note, medical advisors. And remember, they said he also mocked Biden, the senile one, at last Tuesday's presidential debate for wearing a mask at events, even when he's far from others. Can you believe this guy actually disregarding the advice of idiots, even if he doesn't quite yet have the chutzpah to come right out and tell the American people the real truth? The mask is not only idiotic, it's downright dangerous, and it's a sign of slavery that the left is trying to cram down your throats. Oh, and over your mouth and nose. Oh, and while I'm on the subject, a quick aside here. Have you heard about the literal epidemic in facial acne as a result of, well, guess what? It's so bad that even the WAPO New York Times and CNN are openly admitting that mask wearing can lead to skin irritations or acne. In fact, says the WAPO, breakouts of zits, quote, caused by masks have become so prominent that the word maskne has even now been added to the Urban Dictionary. And just listen to this, folks. If this doesn't get your, well, facial dander up at all the idiocy they've been pushing on you and lying to you about for months on end now, oh, wear your mask because it's wonderful, it'll protect others, oh yeah, and it causes no problems whatsoever. Listen to this. Under the heading, Why Masks Cause Irritation, you can find similar stories in the New York Times, CNN, Miami Herald, and etc. Well, it says, masks trap moisture, sweat, oil, and dirt close to our skin. The resulting blemishes can include acne, small bumps, inflamed hair follicles, irritation, pressure sores, broken blood vessels, contact dermatitis, and rosacea, said Jacob Steiger, facial plastic surgeon in South Florida. Sounds like the masks aren't hurting his business. And that's not all. Habits we engage in while wearing masks, if you're cowed enough to do so, I put that in there, of course, can exacerbate the problem because the masks tend to move, and there are very few custom-fitting masks on the market, which are actually the only kind that would do what they're supposed to do anyway. We're continually, they say, touching our faces to adjust them, leaving behind dirt and other irritants on our skin. We also move the mask around to eat or take a sip of coffee, and any friction causes further irritation. Even the simple act of breathing is a complication. Yeah, folks, masks inhibit it. Quote, when we breathe or talk into the mask, we increase moisture, which ends up changing our skin's natural pH, said Steiger, which can result in an overgrowth of bacteria. And isn't that a wonderful concept if the goal here is not to increase the spread of disease, folks? These two-faced purveyors of facial pus pads, even if they're too cowed, dumbed down, or outright emasculated to know what they've signed up for, are openly violating one of the fundamental principles of what was once called medicine. First, do no harm. What a bunch of stinking liars. And how many of these so-called experts that are being given a forum on the criminal news networks anyway, have you heard tell you, take off your facial petri dish and instead make sure you take the supplements that will keep your immune system healthy? Things like vitamin C, vitamin D3 with K2, zinc, and so on. If they cared for their patients or had any knowledge about how to do it, that's exactly what you'd be hearing instead of what you are hearing. For their part, the New York Times talks about all the wonderful new cosmetic offerings to fix maskne, or at least cover it up. But if all else fails, they note, you can take comfort in the fact that the mask itself will cover up the things that it's causing to break out all over your face if you're stupid enough to wear it. 'Cause lest you think I'm soft-pedaling the problem, and I won't do what the WAPO, CNN, and New York Times are in this sense, 'cause after all, they're implying, the pus is just superficial. It's all over your face. Well, folks, imagine what it's doing to your lungs. Oh, yeah, and your immune system, too. Trust me, those who have been pushing this certainly understand what's coming, whether they continue to lie through lips you can't see moving or not. Maybe it harkens back to that old saw about how you can tell when they're lying. You see their lips moving, but now you can't. How convenient. So back to the main story here. Because Reuters isn't done with their spin either. His decision to remove his mask after climbing the stairs to the White House South Portico, a perch that puts him at some distance from others, that's as close as they get to admitting the actual truth in this whole bit of you-know-what, and his insistence that Americans should not fear the disease, horrified, unquote, some people masquerading as physicians. Yeah, folks, let me insert this here. There are MDs, and then there are idiots in scrubs who wear a mask on TV and then lie through those teeth you can't see, said one such scurrilous purveyor of medical BS, William Schaffner, a professor sick of preventive medicine and infectious diseases at Vanderbilt in Nashville. I was aghast when he said COVID should not be feared.
Be afraid. Be very afraid.
Unquote. And notes Bullion Star, Schaffner, Reuters' main source, was of course widely quoted in press reports criticizing Trump's approach and second-guessing his treatment. Maybe the press should remind us of Blofeld in Goldfinger.
No, Mr. Bond, I expect you to die.
And obviously, folks, a whole lot of them are really sorry that Mr. Trump, like 007 as it turns out, failed to do that. And it wasn't just fake doctors who've replaced the Hippocratic Oath with the hypocritical one. The communist press literally had a collectivist hissy fit. During its live broadcast, MSNBC declared Trump's display to be his, quote, Mussolini moment, while CNN called it, quote, something out of North Korea, for crying out loud. But as the Trump War Room pointed out, with very educational video to prove it, various CNN reporters like Caitlin Collins, who pontificate and even obsess over masks and the political theater thereof when the cameras are on, Likewise, take them off as soon as the camera red light goes out. But perhaps the very worst of a very bad bunch was MSNBC's Joy Reid, who turns out to be actually enough of an airhead to go on national TV and say this after seeing the president dare to remove his face diaper. This, she pontificated, is the most irresponsible thing I've ever seen a president do.
Are you crazy? Or just plain stupid?
Stupid is stupid does, Mrs. Blue.
I guess.
I am speechless. I am stunned. I have to be honest with you, I'm disgusted by what I just saw. This man is contagious. He just exposed his Secret Service agents.
Who aren't even close, you blithering idiot.
Dr. Patel, what do you make of that scene of Donald Trump taking off his mask in front of people?
Joy, this has been a series of cringeworthy moments, and that was one of the, I still don't even know how to fully characterize to people how cringeworthy that was.
If you're thinking she's talking about how cringeworthy the idiocy on this show is, no, that's not it. What's cringeworthy, folks, is that these people actually have a national forum, and it's not a comedy movie like Dumb and Dumber or the famous now documentary Idiocracy.
And I guess, Joy, look at the tweets. You know, this is, I'm not afraid. You don't need to be afraid. I feel better than I have in 20 years, with no acknowledgement that 210,000 people and climbing have died from this.
Booga, booga, booga. Be afraid, be very afraid. And at this point, the screen flashes to great big block letters in red showing the numbers of deaths. The trouble is they don't tell you that about 10,000 of those actually died from COVID-19 alone. The rest, 190,000 plus, all had some kind of major comorbidity that arguably would have killed them anyway, including trivial little things like motorcycle wrecks and multiple gunshot wounds to the head. And this is how the big lie is spread. These people have no shame, folks.
And that millions more are sitting wondering, like Neera, what will the longer-term effects of this be?
And that kind of whopper is absolutely shameless. What will the long-term effects be of the vaccine that you're pushing without long-term testing, for crying out loud? You're not even going to tell them about that. What are the effects of long-term mask wearing that you're so horrified about because the president takes even a tiny step towards revealing that whopper? These people have not only mastered Adolf Hitler's big lie, they put Eichmann and Goebbels to shame with their brazenness. There is a divide here, folks. It's never been more obvious. There are those who tell the truth and those who will kill you rather than allow you to hear it. The Bolshevik Revolution is already in progress. They intend to undermine the election. And when it comes to mass murder on a global scale, the likes of which none of us now living have ever seen, brace yourselves, because if it's not obvious, it soon will be. It's coming. For this week's coup update, let's start on Tuesday night with Zero Hedge and what they called a Trump tweet storm, seemingly targeted towards all officials within the executive branch and, of course, what's called the intelligence apparatus. Where he said, quote, I have fully authorized the total declassification of any and all documents pertaining to the single greatest political crime, and it's capitalized, in American history, the Russian hoax. Likewise, the Hillary-Clinton email scandal. No redactions. And in turn, he quotes Paul Sperry, who said, when all the documents are finally declassified and all the redactions removed from reports, the nation will see that the FBI and CIA not only knew the Russia collusion allegations against Trump were a political dirty trick, but that they were in on the trick. But Zero Hedge does go on to note one caution. There's a big difference between the word authorized and ordered. Because you may remember that over a year ago, on May 23, 2019, President Trump authorized the Attorney General, William Barr, to declassify all documents, and despite much optimism, nothing happened. But at least this time around, he does recognize and reference that lack of action, where he said in a follow-up tweet, quote, all Russia hoax scandal information was declassified by me long ago. Unfortunately for our country, people have acted very slowly, especially since it's perhaps the biggest political crime in the history of our country. Act! Exclamation points. And you gotta figure, they note, by that he means people like Attorney General Bill Barr, FBI Director, and Hormeister Jr., Chris Wray, State Department Secretary Mike Pompeo, former ODNI Dan Coats, and CIA Director and Torturer Extraordinaire Gina Haspel, oh, and let's not forget, Stonewaller to boot. which takes us right to this related story, first from the Federalist Sean Davis, who wrote that Haspel is personally blocking the declassification and release of key Russiagate documents in the hope that President Donald Trump will lose his re-election bid. And you do have to say it, with friends like this, who needs enemies? The word public servant doesn't even remotely apply. This, according to multiple senior U.S. officials to the Federalist. The official said that Haspel, who served, under former CIA director, not to mention perjurer and traitor extraordinaire John Brennan, as the spy agency's station chief in London, back at the end of the Obama regime, is concerned that the declassification and release of documents detailing what the CIA was doing during the 2016 election and transition thereafter could embarrass the CIA, gee, who could have thought it, and possibly implicate the torturer Haspel herself. But what she seems to be missing here, added Roger Simon via the Epoch Times, is that the CIA, and of course the FBI too, have already been embarrassed, to put it mildly, that is if they had any shame, and greatly. Their reputations tarnished almost beyond recognition, what with tens of millions of U.S. citizens, in spite of the best efforts of the waste-stream press, already knowing what they've been getting away with. Evidently, continued Roger Simon, she and FBI Director Hormeister Christopher Wray are deluding themselves and pretending that they're protecting vital institutions of our society, waiting for the upcoming traitorous Biden administration to come into power so that all the revelations and potential indictments that might come via John Durham and William Barr, if they ever decide to get off the dime, are flushed down the proverbial memory hole. It won't work, wrote Simon. The only way to resuscitate their reputations is for them, Haspel and Wray, to be fully transparent. And now, before the election. Have you ever heard the words fully transparent even used in the same sentence before, folks, with the FBI and CIA? Just who do they think they're protecting, writes Simon. And I think the answer is increasingly obvious, folks, especially if the names on the incriminating documents are ever actually unredacted. Trouble is, in the meanwhile, he says, they are increasing public distrust of their discredited organizations, a distrust so great that many of us already see our society moving inexorably in the direction of communist China. I mean, really, we've already got the CCP-CIA. What with the high-tech tyranny of socialist credit scores and obedience to an evil big brother that even George Orwell could never quite have conceived. He does make an interesting point in conclusion. When you have been deliberately deceived and lied to literally for year after year after year, even if the media squeals about it like stuck pigs, that's not an October surprise. That's justice. Yeah, I know. Wouldn't that be nice? And a shocking surprise as well. Oh, and guess what? We all knew it was coming anyway, right? By Friday, Bull Durham and his boss, Attorney General William Barr, did what the deep state wanted them to do and what they've been doing most of their careers. They deep-sixed and announced that, no, don't expect anything to come out before November 3rd and the election. Who knows? Maybe never. Although, I guess there really is still hope. If I was looking to really throw a monkey wrench into the deep state operations, I'd wait till after the election and the fix was in and release not an October surprise, but a late November surprise. But don't hold your breath. There is at least a bit of movement. On Tuesday, Director of National Intelligence John Ratcliffe declassified several documents, including handwritten notes from former CIA director and scumbag John Brennan, after he briefed Barack Hussein Obama on an alleged plot by Hillary Clinton to tie then-candidate Donald Trump to Russia as, quote, a means of distracting the public from her use of a private email server. We've talked about this before, ahead of the 2016 U.S. election, now according to Fox News. And Ratcliffe declassified Brennan's handwritten notes, taken when he briefed Obama on the intelligence, that the CIA was alleging to have received, or at least concocted, and a CIA memo which revealed the officials referred the matter to the FBI for potential cover-up or investigative action. The Office of the Director of National Intelligence transmitted the declassified documents to the House and Senate Intelligence Committees on Tuesday afternoon. And here's what Brennan's handwritten notes said. Quote, we're getting additional insight into Russian activities from, oh wait, you're not allowed to hear that, redacted, said the notes. Site alleged approved by Hillary Clinton, and he spelled it wrong, a proposal from one of her foreign policy advisors to vilify Donald Trump by stirring up a scandal claiming interference by Russian security services. unquote. I gotta say it again, why are these people not already wearing orange jumpsuits? A source familiar with the documents told Fox News Tuesday that the allegation was, quote, not disinfo, because, quote, this is not Russian disinformation. Even Brennan knew that, or he wouldn't be briefing the President of the United States on it, said the source. There's a high threshold to brief the President of the United States, and clearly he felt this met that threshold, unquote, or maybe there was another agenda at play here. Said another source familiar with the documents, quote, this information has been sought by hundreds of congressional requests for legitimate oversight purposes and was withheld for political spite and the belief that they'd never get caught, unquote. Furthermore, the Federalist writes that there's no evidence the FBI ever took any actual action to ensure that Russian knowledge of Clinton's plans did not lead to infiltration of that campaign's operation by Russian intelligence agency. The CIA referral, you may have heard it referred to by its moniker, Operation Crossfire Hurricane Fusion Cell, suggests that the Obama regime's anti-Trump investigation may not have been limited to the FBI, but may have included the use of CIA assets and surveillance capabilities, raising what are called troubling questions about whether the nation's top spy service was weaponized against the U.S. political campaign. Unquote. And here we thought the United States hadn't descended into banana republic status. Meanwhile, Twitter is, of course, doing what they always do when it's important and they don't want you to know about it, writes Sean Spencer, saying this is the first time this has happened, when he tried to relay the story regarding the DNI's handwritten notes about Hitler's efforts to push the Russia, Russia, Russia narrative, and he gives links to both Sean Davis and the Federalist. Twitter put this up, and it's an overlay that says, headlines don't tell the full story. And as we're increasingly seeing, neither does Twitter. The Zero Hedge story via Bullion Star concludes by noting that back on September 7th of 2016, U.S. intelligence officials forwarded an investigative referral to former FBI officials James the Whoremeister Comey and Peter Strzok concerning allegations that Hillary Clinton had approved a plan to smear then-candidate Donald Trump by tying him to Russian President Vladimir Putin and Russia, Russia, Russian hackers, according to information given to Senator Lindsey Graham by the Director of National Intelligence. And it looks like at least now, a bit more of that story, about 4 years later, is finally starting to come out. And I'm losing track, folks. Maybe you all remember. Just how many coup attempts have we seen now, so far? Maybe that leads us to this next piece. I've alluded to it already anyway, and it comes via the same source. And it's called Asking the Question That Nobody Dares to Ask Publicly. Well, we do here, because, as the author here points out, you're probably thinking the same thing. Isn't it funny that just recently POTUS, several Republican senators, and a whole lot of people working in his administration and on the campaign all had a random massive cluster of booga 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 infections. And as the American thinkers Sally Zelikowski points out, well, it may not have been planned, but it certainly doesn't pass the random cluster of infections smell test. And yeah, he says, come on, we're all thinking it. The virus appears to have targeted Republicans only and left Democrats unscathed, almost like somebody, maybe it's the same somebody's that wanted this guy out by any means necessary, might have also just decided we want him dead. The timing is, of course, an obvious issue as well. Isn't it convenient that it happened right after the first debate and before any others? And now it's looking like there won't be any more anyway. Surprise, surprise, surprise! And finally, there's this, the fact that the most protected man in the known universe, who insisted on serving and interacting with his people despite the plandemic, refused to hover in an isolated bunker and managed to escape infection for 7 months, but suddenly takes a direct hit in the final crucial weeks of the campaign. What are the odds? And let me add this, folks, since we're talking about things nobody else dares to ask anyway. Why do we think this was the same COVID-19 virus that everybody else has been seeing for so long? SARS-NCoV-2, in other words. If I had a part two, and I was an evil, oh, I don't know, somebody like a Gates or a Fauci that wanted to bring down, you name it, wouldn't this be an ideal place and location to release that part two? Oh, and let's not forget, just the false positives alone make it clear that there are any number of coronaviruses would fit the bill for what we've seen here. How many coup attempts have we seen so far, folks? And yeah, that doesn't even count the latest one by Nutcase Nancy. The 25th Amendment removed the president standing committee or whatever they're going to end up trying to pull. Most of the assassination attempts the media won't even cover. I wouldn't ultimately be surprised to discover, concludes this author, that we've just had a doozy of an October surprise. And your host adds, I don't think they're done yet.